Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, Jackie Cation here. Welcome to the Dork Forest. It's November or December of 2022. You're about to listen to the Dork Forest. My name is Jackie Cation. The website's, of course, jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you enjoy a determiner. Anyway, November and December, I ask that you do not donate to the Dork Forest, that instead you donate to your local food bank, because it's a nice holiday kind of wintery thing to do. And if you don't know where your local food bank is, you can go to feedingamerica.org, or you can Google the words that are your town's name and the word food bank. Hey, sarcasm. JackieCation.com is where everything is linked. Like if you go to dorkforest.com, you can see all the notes and it'll link you to the YouTube videos for the Dork Forest and the and Apple podcasts, and it's on Stitcher. It's on all the things. Anyway, so JackieCation.com will link you to everything. Dork Forest will link you back to JackieCation.com and to everything else. There is merch. If you have some sort of holiday wish to purchase a Dork Forest t-shirt, the logo is now on a black shirt with the logo in that bright green that the Ranger t-shirt used to be. Sold out of the Ranger shirts, discontinued. Also, I have some stand-up shirts that are squish t-shirts. If you wanted a Meat Shield t-shirt, I have limited sizes left, but that's still a benefit for to help immigrants and anti-racism stuff. So if you want, go look around JackieCation.com store for your store needs. I also have a new album out that's playing almost nowhere. That's right, because of legal issues with something called Spoken Giants. Very disappointing. So the special itself is on YouTube, on the 800-pound gorilla YouTube channel, linkable off of JackieCation.com. You could also get a DVD or a CD at JackieCation.com. The CD itself is listenable at places where you can buy it. So at Apple iTunes and at Amazon Music. You could also stream it there. If you buy it, I make more money. But if you want to stream it, do whatever you want. But it's not on Pandora. It's not on Spotify. It's not on Sirius XM. And neither are my four other albums. But do whatever you want because it's your life. There we go. What else is happening? I'm touring. I'm doing a lot of stand-up on the road. Feel free to come. Feel free to sign up for the email list at JackieCation.com. Harder to get on because you got to find how you put it in then to get off, which is you scroll and hit unsubscribe. But all of these things are available on JackieCation.com. I'm coming to do stand-up probably near you, if not near you, near someone you love. Tell them. Anyway, let's dork out about something. Let's get into the show. Hey, Jackie Cation, I'm in my garage. That's right. And with me, friend of the show. I believe you've been on before, but I can't even remember if you've been on.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a. Anyway, Matt Bronger, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Jackie. I'm well. Yeah, I was on. I did strange covers of songs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was a musical one, which means that I blocked it. Someone just asked me if they could talk about Bjork, and I was like, is that an artist or a musician? And so I'm about to find out. I'm pretty sure it is possibly both. Bjork is probably... Didn't Bjork dress as a swan?
Yes. Yes, Bjork was in a group. Oh, God. Were they called the Ice Cubes? No, something...
Turns out, not your dorkdom.
I know her solo stuff, but I was trying to name the band from Iceland that she's from, but someone's listening and they're screaming at me. But I know a lot of her solo stuff, and she's great. But yeah.
And people can look forward to me not knowing any of that.
But sure.
Repeatedly saying things like, I've been to Iceland. Anyway, so that'll be fun for at least me. Mm-hmm. Matt Bronger, yours, we're still in mid-October here. This isn't going to go up, I think, until the second week of November.
Sure.
But people like horror all year long.
Yeah.
And I made you pick. Mm-hmm. You like horror. So I was like, pick different genres for me.
Yep.
And so you did. So what do you want to start with? You want a movie? You want a novella? You want a...
you know, anything. I just kind of, you know, said horror, and then you were like, can you give me five things? Which I was like, great. That's so much better than the whole, you know...
Yeah, it's too big.
You know, form of art. I won't even... You can call it a genre, but it's kind of... One thing I've been kind of... My mother's a English teacher and, you know, a big lover of different kinds of art. She doesn't really like scary stuff, but I was pointing out different stuff that, like, you could look at that as horror too. And she was kind of like liking that. So it's a wider, you know, sphere than people think it is. So yeah, so you narrowing it down to five things I really dug. So yeah, just throw a dart, whichever one you want to start with, we can start with.
All right. Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones.
Yes, that's my...
What is that?
Probably favorite new horror novel. That is, Stephen Graham Jones is a Native American horror writer. He just had a book called My Heart is a Chainsaw that's really great. That kind of... He's one of those guys who will just take a form of horror and be like, I want to make mine. And so My Heart is a Chainsaw is like his final girl thing where there's
I now know what a final girl is.
There you go.
There's always some girl who lives.
Yep.
So My Heart is a Chainsaw is his final, is a novel.
It's his newest. Like, yeah. And sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so he is a novelist and he writes mostly genre, but he sort of picks within that genre.
Yeah. And almost
so far,
I won't say pulpy, but kind of the ones that were kind of formed in the 80s, you know, like the slasher and, you know, the thing that won't die or the, you know, your final girl. My Heart is a Chainsaw. That's a different book, but it's kind of this, that's where he took his kind of like, let's say Jamie Lee Curtis and Halloween kind of thing.
Right.
Under the guise of there's a whole overweening thing of like overdevelopment of environmental areas by rich people that just want to get away. He's a really good writer, but he's also one of those guys. I was in a bookstore today. And I was thinking about how reading his stuff, I almost get a headache kind of just paying attention to all the different things. Cause he writes like a demon. But it's kind of
it's
like,
dense.
I think it's dense, but it's just, it's also a little bit like wildly intricate, if that makes any sense. So
yeah.
So Only Good Indians is a really crazy idea where it's basically a bunch of guys, Native American guys who are hunting and they come across this, group of basically what would be defined as sacred white deer. And they just... where they've been drinking and they're kind of like, well, you know, screw it. And they shoot him and you're not supposed to. And so,
Oh, there's only like nine.
So this spirit, the, which is in the book known as like the deer headed woman, which is this pregnant, you know, cow, the new vernacular of deer, comes back and picks them off one by one. And he's like, this is my Jason. Is how he put it in the book.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's this really, really dark, ruthless character that comes and kills them. It's one of those things where, like, you wouldn't...
It's hard to root for the hunters.
It is. It's hard, but they're also really multifaceted, and there's a lot of different... You know, they also have families, and they're getting killed. So it's really... It's an interesting book where you're not... You know, it's not as simple as a bunch of campers getting killed because they're all doing drugs and having sex.
Right,
you know.
And it doesn't have this Native American hero thing in it. He's just taking something from his own culture and going, well, bad life choices are made.
Exactly.
And then there are consequences.
Yeah.
Especially in horror genre. I mean, horror genre to me, from what I have talked more about horror genre and learned that there seems to be, the B plot is often... consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You're just do not. What are you doing?
Oh yeah.
Don't do that.
Exactly. So much of it is a morality play. You know, it's like every Tales from the Crypt is a morality play. You know, where it's like, I don't care. I just want to get rich. I don't care what happens to anyone. Oh no. You know, it's fun. You know, there's this great, I'll just toss this off of this movie I just saw called Deadstream. That's a no budget movie about a YouTube personality who's just kind of gotten disgraced because he was racist or something. And you find out later what it was, But he's one of those guys who just films himself doing stuff and getting in people's ways. He decides to lock himself into a haunted house and things go terribly wrong, you know, live while people are writing at him. And what is that real? You know, and I remember, I only bring this up to say from the starting, I was like, oh, this is fun. I don't care what happens to this guy.
That's it. That's so, this guy's a douche. I've reclaimed that word, by the way. I've taken it back.
You should, because
it really sums up. So that sounds. Now, how many books has this guy written?
God, I want to say like 5 or 6. He's got. It's one of those things. I've looked at other ones and gone, oh, I want to read that, but I'm just like, oof. Like reading his books is always such an undertaking, but it's always worth it. But I remember with My Heart is a Chainsaw, I was like, I was reading on a Kindle. I'm like, this is probably almost over, right? And I was only 2/3 through, and I was like, oh my God, you know, there must be some other twist. And there was, but I was like, it's a lot. But he's great. And the way that book was pulled off, it's one of those ideas that I always think of writing as so daunting. And how do you stay with this idea? And that's why people write about stuff they've lived. But just to be like, oh yeah, just this ancient spirit is becoming a monster to kill off these guys one by one, and no one believes it's happening. And you know, it's like that.
Right.
I would probably like page 20. I'd be like, I can't keep writing this. This is insane.
Right.
Deer-headed woman? What?
Yes. But, you know, I worked at this hippie t-shirt shop in the 90s, and we had, there was a lot of co-opting of Native American culture for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was the Dreamcatcher years is what I like to call them.
Yeah.
And we had a t-shirt with the white deer on it.
Ah, yeah.
And you're like, and I remember someone going, Is this a charity shirt? Is this going to Native American education? Because it's in Minneapolis, right? Which is the largest Native American population of the country.
Right.
Urban. And no, it was not. I believe Scott Kramer bought his summer home. Anyway, so
I will say Stephen Graham Jones is one of those guys who, if you watch the show like Reservation Dogs, it's very much like that, where it's very modern. It's very like, oh, I'll take things from the old ways, but you're reading it's a very modern book.
He's just a good American guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Who happens to be of Native American ancestry, mm-hmm. and he can take like
whatever he wants. Yeah, anything. Yeah,
yeah.
You could write a
book about how the tall are sometimes super evil.
That's for sure.
Matt Bronger, by the way, is it at Matt Bronger on everything?
No, just at Bronger. Matt Bronger. Yeah.
Okay. And it's Bronger. I never told anybody.
That's fine.
You have a new album. You have a new comedy special.
I do.
You have all the things. Things are happening. Matt Bronger's a great stand-up comic, you guys.
Thank you.
Go find him. So it's, and it's called Doug. You've named it Doug.
I've named it Doug. I named it after I named it after a terrible guy I met named Doug on vacation with my wife. And it's that's the last story in the special, and it has kind of a twist ending regarding him. Stick around, wait for it, as the kids say. It's just about all the stuff I've been through in the last couple of years, and culminating in the story of a guy who my fondest wish is to never be him. You know,
Yeah.
I think us men, we definitely need good examples, but don't forget bad ones. We need some guys, you know.
Right. Look at that flag. That guy's flying his flag.
Yeah.
You could avoid that. You could avoid that entire structure.
And plenty of money, has everything, has wife, has kids. But, you know, just very, very self-centered, always wasted, and didn't like the fact that he even had kids. So that was.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, see? So there's that guy.
Right.
And then there's the guy. There's normal people, mm-hmm. right? Who perfectly nice, straight white guys of the world.
Sure.
Who have lives and they're perfectly decent human beings.
Yeah.
There are the guys that are dirtbags.
Right.
Or horrible. And then they have children and they change, Matt. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, I have a daughter. Now I have a daughter. Oh,
I have.
And you're
I have a bit. I have like a bit about that in my that I've been chilling around. Oh yeah. I say in my act now. I have a daughter now. So I finally understand that women have rights and feelings. And, Because it says every white-wing senator, when you call him on some bill where he's just like, I just think rape's okay in an alley. And they're like, what? Why don't you care about women? He's like, how dare you? I have two daughters. That's throwing a, you know, ace of spades down in
exactly.
a game.
Exactly. I just found out that women were people when I had a daughter.
Yeah.
And so.
Like, how'd you feel before you made two of them? He's like, well, I ran them down in the street. I would kill them outright.
Get him with the door. Get him with the door.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So, and then there's that guy, Doug, who clearly didn't want any part of any of it. But for some reason, his dad was really mean to him and said, if you get somebody pregnant, you have to be unhappily married to them for decades.
Yeah. Doug and his wife were very angry that they had kids and kind of seemed like they're whole MO on vacation was to just get as hammered as possible and just be bitch about their terrible, terrible kids. And so, yeah.
That's great that they're, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, you guys, it's everywhere now. Because when this comes out, it'll be November.
Yep.
So, Dougal, the album's out there. But actually, it'll be the 1st of December that on the 800-pound gorilla YouTube channel, that's where the special will be for everybody to see, and it'll be very exciting.
Yes. Oh, appreciate it. Thank you, Jackie.
Yeah. All right. So that is Stephen Graham Jones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Amazing author. That's kind of cool. Here's a classic horror movie I've never seen, An American Werewolf in London.
Oh, you've never seen it? Wow.
No, can't do it. I understand it's scary. Well, it's werewolves.
It's scary, but it's also hilarious.
Is it?
Yeah, John Landis made it. And he made it, I believe, before... God, was it after? It might have been... I'm going to butcher it, but I think he might have made it after Blues Brothers, and he could do anything he wanted. And he always wanted to make a classic werewolf movie for some reason. And he basically, put his own... kind of, you know, irreverent sense of humor into it. So,
yeah,
you know, this guy gets bit on, he's backpacking through England with his friend, and they are told to stay off the moors. And of course they walk on the moors and they get attacked by a werewolf and his friend gets, you know, killed. And he basically gets taken to a hospital and next full moon, he turns, you know, his best friend keeps appearing. His best friend the actor escapes me, but he was in After Hours, that classic Scorsese movie.
Right.
And a lot of other stuff. He shows up as this sardonic ghost who's telling him, look, you got to kill yourself, man, because you're going to murder people. And it's got incredibly scary parts. But it's also like it's just incredibly funny in parts, and it's one of the only movies I've seen that really balances that really well.
1981.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
David Kessler and Jack Goodman arrive in North. I don't know why I'm reading this. Absolutely, everyone else has seen it.
Yeah.
So, but it's free on Amazon if you have Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And I do. Maybe I'll watch that on Halloween. That'll be good.
Watch it with your husband and I think you're really up on it. It has parts that are very scary, but it's not one of those things where a werewolf is eating this person while I watch. It's
What I like to watch on Halloween is actually those Abbott and Costello monster movies.
Oh, so good.
They're so good, and a couple of those are kind of scary.
Yeah.
But if it's supposed to also be funny, I'm in.
Yes.
And so a ghost shows up and keeps telling him to kill himself.
And the more people he kills as a werewolf, the ghosts keep coming to him. And
all of them.
Yeah, and they keep going, hey man, like they're hanging out with him, and he can't get away. And like there's like a lot of the kills when he's a werewolf, you kind of see the werewolf going towards, like let's say, like there's this really cute British couple in a nice townhome, and they're having a cocktail, and they hear something, and the woman opens the door, and she's like, hello, and you just hear and then it just turns, you just go somewhere else. Next time you see them, they're both eviscerated sitting next to him. And the guy's friend, who's slowly rotting, by the way, the more he's around him, is like, well, you know, the Taylors, you killed them or whatever. And the woman just goes, hello. Like, even though he's killed them, they're so polite. You know?
Oh, my God. That is so he's trapped in London. Yeah. Does he need a visa? That's interesting.
Yeah, he is. He's living with a nurse who took him home from the hospital who he's in love with. And so, and he just wants, it's this thing of, I think I'm going crazy. You know, I don't know what's wrong with me. He thinks it's all kind of happening in a dream.
Right.
And that he's experiencing trauma and kind of seeing his friend in his mind.
Okay.
But as, you know, he sees like a newspaper and it's like body found or whatever. And yeah, it just keeps happening. And it also has, it's all practical special effects, there's a scene where the first time he turns into a werewolf, John Landis was like, I thought about it and it occurred to me that turning into a werewolf is probably incredibly painful. And so it's this kind of, like, I'm not a big, what you call body horror person. I'm not a big fan of it. Eliza Skinner had a great point when we were talking once, where she's like, all women love body horror because a woman's life is body horror. Everything, pregnancy, menstruation, you know, all that.
Right, right. It just keeps happening.
Hot flashes. Yes, exactly.
Right. There's no end to it.
Yes. And so, you know, with body horror, it's like something's going wrong inside me. You watch him change into a giant wolf and you see the hair come out and the bones are stretching. And I remember as a kid, I found it so disturbing, but now I watch it and I'm just like, this is just fascinating in terms of how they did this.
I wonder if he was one of the first people to do that, because the werewolf movies I've seen before that,
right,
they'll just, it's growling, 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 shadow, and then werewolf, right?
And he's still pretty humanoid, whereas...
Right. It's not a lot of screaming like my bones are breaking.
No, he's not a guy like losing his mind as his face extends into a wolf's face or a head, I should
say. Which would, yeah.
That would hurt so bad. Your bones are coming out. Yeah. And
so I wonder if John Landis actually was the first to do that. I don't know.
It came out around the same time as The Howling, and The Howling had a similar thing, but it wasn't. It just looked more like the person was like, I'm changing, look at me. Whereas with American Werewolf, he's just like, this hurts so bad. You know, like, make it stop,
serious amount of pain.
Exactly.
That is hilarious.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's, again, another morality play where you're just like, if you turn into a monster, you should probably take yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I will say the great thing about all the classic monsters is that they're all kind of, they're all based on primal fears, where like the werewolf is addiction. What did I do last night? Can you tell me what I did? You know, specifically alcoholism.
Yep.
Frankenstein is, why doesn't mom love me? You know.
Okay.
I love you. I need love.
His parents don't love him.
I never asked to be alive. Why don't you love me? Get away from me! You're a monster. You're a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Help! You know. You know, I've always said vampire, like Dracula, is kind of fear of dying, fear of getting old, which is why Dracula's always like just dressed to the nines and look at
me. Just tricked out and immortal.
And everyone's like, you're still creepy. Go away, old guy. And I think the mummy is just, you know, the thing of get out of my house. Like, why are you here? This is, you know,
right.
That's, and it's that, like that's a morality play. It's like, why did you go in that tomb? That's not yours. That's someone else's grave. Get out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
You just want to take shit. He's going to kill you. Yeah. So, you know, it's,
he was buried with his stuff on purpose.
Exactly.
He wanted to keep it.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted to have it. You just, again, to your point, these are all moralities. These are all, you know, you want to steal from the mummy. You don't love your kid, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, yeah, that is, oh my gosh, that is so fascinating to me. Cool. Well, what's the story of X?
X is my favorite modern horror of the past couple of years, which is a guy named Ty West made, and it's about a group of people in the 70s who decide to rent a strip club owner and a couple of the dancers and a guy, a Vietnam vet, and a couple young filmmakers in training from the local college decide to rent a little house on a farm and make a porno. And while they're there, terrible things start happening to them. And that I don't want to give too much away, but I will.
Right, because it was last year.
Yeah.
Or this year, yeah. Actually. It says Exodus 2022.
And I heard, I heard it was great. I didn't love the idea, but I watched it and I thought two things. I was like, wow, that was awesome. And also, I liked and or related to everyone in that movie. And
oh, really?
Including the killer.
Right.
And even including the you'd think the guy who owned the strip club, who's just like, let's just make a porno. It doesn't matter. We're going to make you all stars. He even didn't. It felt like he was doing it for the right reasons. You have Kid Cudi, who played the Vietnam vet, who's like the stud of the porn. And then you have these two women, one who's kind of like, hey, I don't care. I'm a bad girl kind of stripper. Mm-hmm. And then a girl who's like, I just want to be a star. And then, you know, you have the young couple who are dating, who are filming everything. And it gets into a lot of fears, not only of becoming of being irrelevant or how do you make your voice heard, but also of getting old. And getting, you know,
like there's just that brief shining moment where you better capture it on film or you're completely irrelevant.
Yes. And that's how they look at it. But then you have this killer who's dealing with it on an entirely different level. And you have,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. And it's kind of if you draw way back, it's about kind of the fear of just never being noticed, of having a forgotten life.
Okay.
And also a fear of getting killed badly too. It definitely has echoes of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre a little bit kind of thing. Not because of someone gets killed in a chainsaw. They don't. But
right.
I remember walking out of that. I saw it in a movie theater and I was just like, that was just a good movie. You know, it wasn't just like
character studies of all these different kind of people.
Yeah. And not an ounce of fat in the script. Like
that's
everything,
amazing.
Everything worked. So yeah, that's why I say it's my favorite modern one. Yeah.
Current.
Current. Thank you. Yes.
Yes. I like it. Cause that is, I've never heard of any of these people, but that isn't a sign of anything. Mia Goth, Jenna Ortega, Martin Henderson, Brittany Snow, Owen Campbell, Stephen Urey, and Scott Mascuti. And here's the thing. All of those people, I have Wikipedia pages, except for Stephen Urey.
Okay.
Who's just like, I'm not even that famous.
That's fine.
I don't even get a... So, fair enough. So, whatever, right? Okay, short stories. Shirley Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Jackson. The lottery. It is Jackson. Okay.
It's Jackson. Sorry, if I put Jackson, that's my bad.
Typo,
yes. I love short horror stories, and I kind of picked the one that everyone gets in school, but I did because it's so universal and because it's so the turn is so horrifying and Twilight Zone-ish. One of the biggest compliments I give anything horror related or short story related or even sci-fi related is, man, that felt like a Twilight Zone. I remember I said that to when Get Out came out. I DM'd Jordan Peele. I was like, that was like a feature length Twilight Zone, man. And he was like, that's what I was going for.
Oh, good.
You know, because it is. It's this kind of, you don't know what's really going on. It's a larger metaphor, and the lottery is, you know,
it's like the Purge, sort of.
Yes, or like
it's been ripped off a fair amount.
Oh,
yeah. I think.
You know, The Wicker Man, Midsommar, where they don't see it as being bad. It's just something they have to do, and that's almost scarier. Where it's like, you're going to die, and you're like, don't kill me, and everyone's like, but this is the ritual.
Right,
you know,
right. They like, did a Star Trek episode about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I forget that. Well, you're right. I forgot which one that was.
It was a planet that had a war for so long that they had automated it. And so the AI told them who died and just picked people randomly from whatever the city that they, and the people just lined up to die.
Yep.
And they were like, well, this is, I think it was old Star Trek. It was original Star Trek. And they were like, No, you're going to really bomb each other. And then wow. You might really have peace at the end of it. And it was such a weird message.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how messed up are we as a type of organism?
Species. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. The species. Oh, that yeah. We have to, there must be a sacrifice. There just right. has to be, you know? And
right, right.
I remember first time I read that story as a kid, I remember the part where the little child picks up the handful of gravel. Like everybody's okay. throwing rocks at this woman. And yeah. even the children are like, I'm joining in because my mom's yeah. doing it. I was like, that just scared the shit out of me. Cause I'm like, this is entirely believable.
You know? Here's a weird story that I just, that somebody pointed out, I wish I could remember who, is that all the people that are still alive who survived the Holocaust in Germany, mm-hmm. They were tiny children when they were in Auschwitz yeah. and all of the different places. So their stories of when they were taken away, of when they were turned on, were the kids at school.
Oh my God.
Their neighbors, the neighbor kids turning on them. And they were like, so their memories are not the memories of the adults who have since passed away.
Right.
Who were like, well, the police came and we didn't know what to do. Or I went to work and my boss was like, you're fired. You're Jewish.
Yeah.
And in this case, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps.
Me too.
It's like it's children.
Oh, my God.
Murdering other.
Yeah. It's like. I was at the beach with my daughter and these like older kids would not let her play with their stuff. And she got really sad and it broke my, I'm way too sensitive. I broke my heart, but I picked her up and carried away and we went and got ice cream and had fun. And everyone is, the thing is kids are honestly way nicer than I thought they would be. Like older kids, like at her daycare, love her. And you know, they all look out for each other. And it's so sweet.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. To imagine a little, you know, child of less than five being ostracized by other kids because their parents are like, that isn't a person. I mean, that thought, holy shit. It just.
Yeah. That's a horror movie.
Yes, it is. Then, oh my God. Yeah. Wow.
And the other weird thing, and just, this is one of the reasons I don't read horror or watch it is because I can kind of see it. So it's like every 27-year-old, not every 27, but several 27-year-olds have said to me, Jackie Cation, recently, that they were going through trauma therapy.
Wow.
And I was like, what? What is happening? What was so traumatic about your babyhood? And and here's what's traumatic. I did some math, and easily 27 years ago, 24-hour news cycle was invented.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So they were raised in an anxiety bubble.
Yep.
And absolutely every horrible thing that's happening all around the world. Because I was raised fucking Pony Express, right?
Same.
Two weeks late with a lot of analysis. That's how I like my news.
That's, oh my God.
I can't fix Ukraine. I'm willing to throw $100 at something.
Sure.
But if I'm getting instant, you know, film, like footage of horrible, horribleness.
Yeah.
And I'm 4 years old and my parents are, you know, they watch the news because they're responsible adults. And the four-year-old is watching the news. And it's even the Weather Channel. Nope.
No. That's entirely too much.
Plausible. It's plausible that they all have trauma.
Exactly.
I mean, why wouldn't they?
I 100% believe in that. To me, the best thing about horror, at least for me, is the catharsis of finding something that could be an analogy, but isn't exactly what, you know?
Definitely
the horror, the Holocaust is one of the ultimate horrors in somewhat recent history, without a doubt. I would rather watch a thing where it's about the Nazis' obsession with the occult and the Jewish, the Jewish scientists who fought them. And, you know, like that's the kind of thing that I much more enjoy. There's a great movie called The Vigil that's about a guy who's an ex-Orthodox Jewish man who has kind of left the faith, but has more left the ritual. And he asked to do a vigil. What a traditional vigil is, someone has to sit up with the body all night.
Right.
And so he gets paid to sit up with the body. He doesn't realize that this body has a what's called a Dybbuk, attached to it, which is a demon, which is a Jewish demon. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this Jewish demon's power is it draws on sadness. And so it's been thriving a long time since you know when. Yeah. And it's, and he basically, he has to throw off not only the shackles of what he sees as the negative part of his faith and the ostracization he receives as a openly Jewish man, but also, to say, you know, fuck you. I have enough to feel sad about. You don't get to make me feel sad. So it's kind of like, I always say, everybody wants life to be Star Wars. If there's only like a Death Star, we blow up and all the bad stuff goes away. If there's only like you kill the main vampire, all the other people turn back. You know that horseshit.
Yeah, yeah.
It, like Hemingway said, isn't it pretty to think so? Yeah, I like, isn't it pretty to think so sometimes?
It is
I like
pretty
to watch
to think
things
so.
Like that. Yeah.
As my brother Phil once told me, and I've co-opted it, I like my Nazis buffoonish.
Yeah.
I do not, for the love of God, I do not want to see a competent Nazi.
No.
This is terrifying.
Yeah.
And I will say this about Star Wars. I went to Disneyland and I went to the Rise of the Rebellion.
Uh-huh.
Ride or Rise of the Empire. I forget what it's called. And it's the greatest ride I've ever been on. Once you get on the ride, the first four or five minutes, they separate you into, it's like an ICE detention center.
Whoa.
It is incredibly unnerving.
Wow.
And so they make you stand on different colors, and all they're doing is separating you into you know, you're going to go in that ride car, you're going to go in that ride car. But it's the only cast members at Disneyland who get to be slightly mean.
Oh, sure.
Because you've been captured by the Empire.
Yeah.
And so they're like, And they literally say to little kids, what color are you standing on? Mm-hmm. What color are you standing on?
Right.
And you're like, no, just give me the ride.
Ooh,
and
wow. That's brutal.
Go lay down. Pardon me, I'm going to yell at my dog.
It's okay.
Hello. Go lay down. Okay. So, the lottery, holy smokes. I've never actually read that, but I've heard.
It's a quick read.
1948,
I guess.
You should
check it out because it kind of just throws the whole, you know, any kind of conformity for conformity's sake or for safety's sake under the bus in the best possible way. And kind of
that's
like,
awesome.
When we stop and go, hey, wait a minute. This is who we are. We do this. This is insane. You know,
what's interesting is I noticed that it was in the New Yorker. So when you say it's short, I don't believe you. And then second of all, it was written in 1948 and published.
Wow.
Which is right after World War II.
Yep.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is interesting as well.
Yes.
About conformity and about sort of complicity, like societal complicity.
Uh-huh.
So that is it. That's fascinating. The Lottery by Shirley Jackson, you guys.
And Shirley Jackson also wrote The Haunting of Hill House. She wrote a lot of great horror.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's great.
That is fascinating. What about Ray Bradbury?
Novel. My classic novel, Something Wicked This Way Comes. I have a first edition copy of it, of the book.
Okay.
And
because you like it that much.
Well, yeah, I it's one of those books I really love because it's kind of about, I remember seeing the movie that was done by Disney, ironically, when I was a
weird
kid, you know, probably one of the scariest things they've ever done. And it's a little bit more of kind of a fantasy novel, but I love the idea of an old timey circus going from small town to small town, kind of harvesting souls to take along with it. And there's a guy named Mr. Dark who his arms are covered in tattoos and he has the top hat. And
I've seen that trope.
Yeah,
that's been ripped off.
Yes,
holy smokes!
And he basically is this literally a circus ringleader. And people who go to this circus, they go through, like, you know, the Hall of Mirrors, and they're promised things. And of course, as soon as they're like, yes, it goes badly for them. You know, again, morality play in a sense, but also these are often lonely, scared people. And, you know, much like that movie I talked about, The Vigil, and, you know, other things, it's kind of like when the evil forces play on our insecurities is how they get us. When you give in to your sadness, when you give in to despair. And so the the two main characters of the book are a little boy and his dad, who is, I think, in his 50s. And this is always very funny to me, this part, now that I have a 2-year-old and I'm 40, I'm 48. And
okay.
there's a line in the book where the dad laments. He's like, didn't have a child until he was 40. Like he says, the line in the book is like, he says it, it's like he had a kid at 80. You know, like just doing? And he feels guilty because he can't really keep up with his adolescent son as well as the other dads. And, you know, he feels like I've failed you, where the son is like, you know, when they have this great moment near the end where one way they kind of win is the son is like, I never knew any of that. And I didn't care, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, I love you, Dad. And so it's that thing going back to your 24-hour news cycle, quite honestly.
Yeah, right.
Once you value yourself and you value your mind and you value your emotional state enough to stop watching all that clickbait bullshit all the time, which is just for profit, make no mistake.
Nope. It's just trying to keep you scared. That's all it's about.
Yes. I have my news sources that I read, by the way.
I only read.
Yeah. In the morning. And then I leave it alone. So it's like, I'm not great. I still look at social media all the time. I still look at the news all the time.
I see clips. I get clips, plenty of clips.
Even I stopped listening to, leaving like talk radio on all day, which I used to do. I don't.
Oh my God.
Not anymore.
Yeah, no.
Not anymore.
No.
So,
because it's just rehashing.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, a broad analogy, but like Mr. Dark and his acolytes will prey upon people who remember when they were prettier or remember when they were more desired for their mind or whatever. Remember when they felt like they were still in the game. And,
right.
You know, so it's like, you know, not to be like, we all have a devil and a God inside us or an angel, la, la, la. But it's like there is that thing in you that tells you, you know.
What about this? Because what you said earlier, do they ever do that thing where they're like, well, you want to help people. All you have to do is cheat these 5 people and then you could help hundreds of people.
There's that in kind of like Needful Things, that Stephen King book, you know.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's a guy who has a gift shop and he, once you see this gift, like it's something like if you found it, it'd be like, for you, I'd say it'd be like that that comic book you always wanted but couldn't find.
Right.
He's like, you can have this, but all you have to do is like set so-and-so's barn on fire. It's like, and he starts playing the town against each other kind of thing. So
okay.
That would be more that version. With this one, it's more...
It's preying on their insecurities.
Preying on their insecurities and,
it's not,
and giving
it's not
what
promising
they,
them.
No, well, it's like, I'll make you beautiful again. You know, you'll have these experiences, but then they basically become enslaved to the circus. And and it's also got like some fun little, you know, Bradbury's always got these little tools and things like the merry-go-round. If you go on it and it goes backwards, it makes you younger. And so he has like Mr. Dark has like a right-hand man who gets on it and makes it so it makes him like age of 5. And then he goes into town to try to talk to kids to go like, you guys hear about the circus? And so whoa, how cool. You had a neat little, little twist.
Yeah. That's some marketing genius right there.
Yeah.
It's the one that I was thinking about was that because some guy was telling me, he was like, he was saying, I would love to help so many people.
Yeah.
And sometimes my brain tells me, well, if you sell this, you know, if you pitch this and sort of, you know, get this, you will make millions of dollars that then you can help other people. But all you have to do is cheat these 100 people. And then, and you're just like, and then you can help thousands of people and then you'll also be rich.
Right.
And you don't want to really, you want to be rich because you want to be rich, but you also want to be rich because you want to help people. So how you could do that is if you were a creep. And all you have to do is be a creep for like, I don't know, a couple of years. And then just think, you'll turn around, you'll be Carnegie, you'll open libraries, you'll, you know, you won't be Meyer Lansky, you won't start Vegas.
Sure.
You'll do good with it. Yeah, yeah. So that'd be a really actually a pretty good Stephen King novel.
That's a great idea. I really love that. I really love that idea of like almost a Bond villain philanthropist. You know, like Ozymandias in Watchmen, whose whole plan is to kill half the population to save, so we don't use all the resources, or you know,
Thanos.
Thanos, exactly. Same thing.
As you snap.
As I snap. What's his name? If you believe I kept snapping and couldn't remember, and you're like, it's Thanos. Thanos.
It's still Thanos. Remember, Thanos.
Stop snapping.
And, yeah. As somebody said about that, he was like, why didn't Thanos snap his fingers and double the amount of resources we had?
Oh my God. I feel like someone just said the we did a thing about it on a show I was on once about why didn't Gandalf just ride that damn hawk to the volcano and drop the damn ring in? Why'd they have to walk?
Except for that has been addressed in canon. If you ride the eagles to Mount, if you ride the eagles to Mount Doom,
yeah,
the eagles get hungry and they eat the hobbits. Anyway,
okay, thank you. The Thanos one unaddressed. So that stands.
Unaddressed. Yes, and I think I called it, you guys. Wakanda Forever. I think I saw Michael B. Jordan in the trailer, and when in the first Black Panther, when he said, throw me into the ocean, I was like, you throw a body into the ocean, no more body. You throw a body into the ocean, Namor finds that body and resurrects that body. I don't think, and Namor is in it, and Michael B. Jordan is in it.
Oh my God.
So I don't know if someone heard me or if that's the obvious joke. You know how like you write the joke and it's
the
joke that everybody writes?
But that's,
I can't tell.
That's genius. I never thought of that. I didn't see Michael B. Jordan in the trailer. I've only seen it once, but maybe it's a different trailer you saw.
I think that was Michael B. Jordan.
But that'd be incredible.
Yeah. And while I Google the words Wakanda Forever and Michael B. Jordan,
sure.
Tell people, Matt Bronger, the name of your new show.
It's called Doug. It's a special about my life having a kid, the pandemic, driving 3,300 miles across the country with a 6-week-old and my wife, meeting every kind of person during an election year, driving an electric car with California plates, always a good idea throughout the South, and culminating in a very fun, lighthearted story of meeting a very annoying rich guy on vacation with my wife. And that's, I named a special after him. And it was, I kind of named it that because, you know, his name wasn't Chad. His name wasn't, Zach. But his name was Doug. And every other Doug.
It wasn't Brandon.
Every other Doug I've met has been super laid back and cool and they smoke weed. And Doug did not. You know, it was one of those things. It struck me as quite ironic that he had that name. So.
Right, because it's a normal name. Doug should have been a good guy.
Yeah.
It's very funny. Chad Daniels' mom's name is Karen.
Perfect.
he's like, I'm so screwed. My name is Chad. My mother's name is Karen.
I love it.
So we have, I think, one more. The novella by Richard Matheson.
Yes, I Am Legend, which I did as a special mention, it's a little bit of a cop out because it's not really a novel. It's not really a short story, but I love it because I don't really think they've ever done it right in film. And they've made like 3 or 4 versions of it.
Right. I think there's at least 2 that I know of.
Because I think the Vincent Price one kind of came the closest. But
wait, when was it written?
Is it
old?
Let me see. Richard Matheson is a legend of horror because he wrote
54.
Yeah, 54.
Wow.
So he also wrote Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, the Twilight Zone episode where the guy sees his thing on the wing.
Oh my God.
He's kind of this master of the short form. Very imaginative, very kind of Ray Bradbury, very Shirley Jackson-esque, maybe with a little bit more whimsy. But I Am Legend I love because, you know, not to give the ending away, but the ending The ending is the title. And
okay.
So he's basically a guy who in every kind of movie, like the, let's say the Will Smith version, he's in New York. He's the only guy. And he goes out and he scavenges and he kills these kind of mutant-ish vampire zombie. You can't tell what they are things.
Okay.
You know, during the day and at night, he locks the door tight when they come out. And, you know, with the Charlton Heston version, it's almost like he's fighting these kind of communist lefty zombies that are wearing hoods all the time. And it's very strange. And,
okay,
you know, he watches the Woodstock documentary by himself to, you know, because he wants to the togetherness, see, almost like the togetherness thing failed, you know, but he wished it hadn't had. It's really odd. But the book is just about a guy in his neighborhood who all of the vampires know him. And at night, they come on his lawn and they call him by his name. And they're like, dude, come out. It's a great life. And the women are like taking their clothes off. And they're like, don't you want to be with us? And I remember reading the book and going, I think I was probably in college. And I was far from home. I didn't have a lot of friends. And I remember just reading, oh, my God, he's just lonely. He's so lonely. And he goes out and he kills them because he doesn't know what else to do, but there's nobody else.
He doesn't want to give up.
No, but
he doesn't want to kill himself, essentially.
Right. But he's getting there. And he's just like, and it's that thing that makes you realize, the biggest thing would in the moment be, oh no, don't bite my neck. But the second to second is like, I just want someone to talk to. I just wish if anyone would just come in this room and I could talk to them, you know? And it sounds so boring when I say that, but people don't think about how damaging loneliness is.
Yeah.
He meets a woman and, you know, I'll let people read it.
A human woman?
It's
okay.
Or is she? So it's,
or is she? Okay. Yeah.
And
so
there is that. It's just the thing I liked about it. It was one of those things I read it and I was like, this is like an amazing play. You know, you could put this play on with like 10 people, maybe playing different characters, but. Yeah.
Did you ever? I've never seen it. My brother told me about it. It was his least favorite book that movie that haunts him, and but it's also from the 70s.
I love that setup. I just It's so specific.
A boy and his dog.
Yes. Oh God. Don Johnson. Right.
I think so. I think so.
Yes.
And I said, didn't you love? I said it to him recently. I said, wasn't that you told me about that movie? That was you loved that movie, and he goes, I did not love that movie. That movie haunts me. And
it's a post-apocalyptic thing where it's Don Johnson and his dog. And if I remember correctly,
Miami Vice Don Johnson?
Before. This came out in 1975. So he's probably like an older teenager. He like spends his days raping women. Like,
oh my God.
It's like he's just walking across the post-apocalyptic desert. And his dog is like telepathic or something.
Yep.
It's so weird. I've only read about it. I'm not that person that's like, that sounds crazy. I'll watch it because I'll get a half hour in and be like, nah.
Nah.
But, yeah, it's just.
I get it. I don't need to be there. Yeah, that's fine. What Russ told me about that movie, and I'm willing to spoil this movie, is that he said that his dog could smell if there was a woman, and it was a poke because there were women who were would pretend to be men, or there weren't a lot of women left, and so I guess, and I was like, and he falls in love with this woman, or does he?
Okay,
and spoiler alert, feel free to hit skip. The dog eats the woman.
Okay.
And so they kill her and eat her.
I just saw that the book is by the original book. It was a book. It's by Harlan Ellison, who's one of the darkest horror writers of all time.
I have a really hard time with Harlan Ellison.
I mean,
only just because he slapped Connie Willis's ass at a con and 20 years ago.
Right.
So the dude. Who knows? Maybe he's all awakened and he has arrived.
Yeah.
But probably not.
I don't know him, but I thought it was a great idea. But, you know, the story.
He's written some great stuff.
I Have No Mouth Yet I Must Scream is one of the scariest. Well, and slash most fucked up short stories of all time. It's great, but it's also like, yeesh. Now I feel now I feel awful for the future and for, you know, it.
Yeah, not cheerful. I've tried to read Philip K. Dick, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll watch a Philip K. Dick movie, especially if it's been put through a rock tumbler of Hollywood where, you know, Ben Affleck is in it.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm in. You want me to watch Paycheck? I'm on board.
Sure.
Anyway, so Paycheck, by the way, is not a great movie.
No.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yes. Harlan Ellison, Connie Willis writes kind of a scary sci-fi kind of books where the Doomsday Project, I think is what it was called.
Oh.
And it's sci-fi or Doomsday fantasy
book. Yeah.
Book, Doomsday Book. And it's essentially in the future, they invent time travel. And so, but it's only for use by PhD students, as far as I can remember.
Okay.
And which made me laugh. And then, one of the PhD students wants to go back and study right before the Black Death, right before the plague.
Oh, okay.
Turns out they set the dial a little off.
Oh, no.
Guess what happens? So, but it's actually very, very interesting. And she writes some other lighter set in that same universe. So,
okay.
But they're always super, like, you could talk to dogs and stuff. It's very interesting.
Wow. I'll check her out.
I like Connie Willis a fair amount. N.K. Jemisin, the Broken Earth trilogy is, it's that old timey mix of sci-fi and fantasy.
Right.
So it's more sci-fi than fantasy, but it's a little bit fantasy.
Yeah.
And that's what they all used to be in the 50s and 60s. It was there was telepathy and there was earthquakes, but there was also science.
Yes.
And so the N.K. Jemisin's Broken Earth trilogy, N.K. Jemisin, by the way, won the Hugo 3 years in a row.
Whoa.
For each of those books.
Oh, wild. That's crazy.
And fun fact, she's Kamau's cousin.
Oh, amazing. Oh, that's incredible.
Weird, right?
That is weird.
And I would highly recommend that book series. I believe they're going to make a TV series out of it.
Okay.
And if it's done right, and as we know, TV series can sometimes be done better than the movies.
Well, there's I would to throw a recommendation to you.
Yeah,
there's
please.
A series. It's on Shudder, but Shudder is partnered with AMC. You can watch it on AMC. It's called Queer for Fear, and it's produced by Brian Fuller, and it's basically modern and classic horror. It's seen through a queer perspective, gay, bi, trans, non-binary. And one big thing that I loved about it is I learned, you know, so I knew Frankenstein, but I didn't know a lot about Mary Shelley and how in the 1700s she was like a feminist firebrand, and that she basically, as one of the commentators said, just created horror and sci-fi in one novel, whatever, you know.
Right. I think she was 1800s, not 1700s?
1800s, excuse me. Yeah, 1800s.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And it's
just because I do know a Ranger of the Dork Forest is right now going, actually.
Of course. Okay.
Of
course.
It's me.
Nice.
Okay, so what else? Yeah, what else would you watch TV-wise? Are there series that you like besides Queer for Fear?
I'm along the same lines, Shudder did another one called 101 Scariest Moments. And it's fun to watch because it's like you get to see people pick like, oh, something random or something. Oh, we all know, you know, Nicholson's face through the door and Shining or whatever. But then there'll be one you haven't. I don't even know what that movie is kind of thing.
Did you watch the Marvel Werewolf?
I just finished it last night. Very fun.
It was very fun. Yeah. And we can only hope that Elsa Bloodstone. That I like that casting. I didn't mind that casting at all.
And
Man Thing.
Yeah.
I woke up the next day wondering if Man Thing could kill Thanos, if Thanos had any kind of fear ever.
Right.
I don't think he did. I don't think he was ever afraid.
No. So. Yeah. He's kind of. I remember him from the comic books being a little more imbalanced. You know, because he was.
Yeah. Oh, he's completely
the Mad Titan. But
He's. You ever get a chance to read his origin story, it just got written like 3 years ago.
Okay, cool.
And it is spooky. I mean, it's not spooky, but it's like his imaginary friend is Death when he's a kid.
Great.
So it's, I think that's what she is, but I don't know. She might actually be Death.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, Sandman, the TV series Sandman, right, was actually pretty creepy.
Oh, was? Okay, cool.
I thought, yeah.
That's on my list. That's on my list. It's an amazing book for sure.
Yeah.
Amazing graphic novel series. Yeah, I'm trying to think of what else, but yeah, I'll just throw those in because it's fall time and you know.
Do it. Yeah. I love it. Matt Bronger, this has been a delight, quite
this
honestly.
This has been awesome, Jackie.
It's so great. This is what we call in the Dork Forest is plug and play.
Hooray.
This was, everybody should find Matt Bronger doing stand-up comedy, which is probably, is it Bronger.com?
It's Matt, that's MattBronger.com. Yeah.
There you go. That's got to have tour dates on it. He's on the road as much as I am, I think, even though you do have a bit.
Well, I think you're more than I am now. I scaled back a little bit to take the weekend weight off my wife some.
Yeah,
because she's Rose is only two, and she's very fast and she's very strong. So
she's got a good juke.
Got a good juke.
Awesome.
Yes. Very, so very juggernautish. That
excellent
kid. So.
Oh my God, unstoppable. Where somebody find Doug. Find Doug, listen to it, watch it on the moving pictures, and follow Matt Bronger at Bronger on all the things. Thank you so much for doing the show, Matt.
Oh, thank you for having me, Jackie. It was super blast. Appreciate it.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?